Let's play some cards.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
From Harrah's Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and professional broadcaster Paul Harris.
You're good, kid. But as long as I'm around, you're second best. You might as well learn to live with it.
You got to know when to hold up. Know when to fold up.
Now, from the World Series of Poker Room at Harrah's St. Louis, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
And we are sitting here in the middle of the third annual World Series of Poker Circuit event in this World Series of Poker Room at Harrah's St. Louis. I am Paul Harris, sitting alongside Dennis Phillips, and joined today also by the media director for the World Series of Poker, Nolan Dalla, who's in town for the first time. Welcome to St. Louis.
Thanks very much, Paul and Dennis. Nice to be with you in St. Louis. My first time. I've driven through here many times, but I've actually never stayed in the great city of St. Louis, and it's everything I had hoped and imagined.
Well, I run into Nolan, obviously, out in the Rio during June and that, but at Hammond, Indiana, or Rincon, or you name it, or something, it seems like he's always there working.
Yep.
How many miles a year do you put on a plane or a flight or whatever?
Well, let's say I do have, gold status on all the airlines with the frequent flyer thing. being on the road is, I guess, a mixed bag. I'll tell you a really quick personal story. When I was younger and I used to see all these businessmen going through airports and carrying their bags, mm-hmm. I thought, what a great life that is, being able to travel all around the country and flying. And then when you start flying and staying in hotel rooms 150 days a year, it's not quite as glamorous. But I'll say one thing. I love working for the World Series. I've been with this organization for more years than I can count, and it's a great job. And the best thing about it is going to a place like this and meeting new friends, new people for the first time, and who get to experience the World Series of Poker. Otherwise they may not be able to come to Las Vegas, so it's terrific.
Yeah, well, we've got a lot of people here, more than we had last year. In fact, just over the weekend on Saturday, mm-hmm. we set a new record for the largest poker tournament in the history of the state of Missouri. Last year, we had some 873 or so in our biggest event. This year, 1,066 in the re-entry event, a $355 buy-in event that took two flights to play out. One started at noon, the other one started at 5 o'clock. And
who came in 72nd on that one?
I don't know, but I came in 73rd.
Oh, 73rd. Boy, did I blow that, guys. Oh, well, never mind.
I almost beat 1,000 people in that tournament. The good news is finishing 73rd was a cash.
Yep.
My second of the tournament so far. I played four and cashed in the middle two
very
of those.
Very good.
So I'm very happy about that. And you actually just got into town very, very early Monday morning. And then came over here and played in two tournaments just on Monday alone.
Well, what it was, left Las Vegas flying here. The flight from Vegas got delayed. I got into Dallas over 2 hours late. Went, I'm going to spend the night in Dallas. Got there. And that flight to St. Louis was delayed by 3 hours. So I made it up here 2:30 in the morning or something like that. Made it over here late. Missed the first level of the tournament. Got in for the second level and was gone by the third.
Yep. Well, you had a real cooler. Straight over straight.
We each flopped a straight, yes. I had the second nuts.
Mm-hmm.
There was only one hand possible to beat me. And, mm-hmm. of course, the gentleman was happy enough to have it.
Before we go any further, I do want to congratulate the five people who have won rings here in the first five events here, mm-hmm. at the World Series of Poker Circuit event. Shane Matthews from Marysville, California, won $29,000 for event one. Jerry Ard from Monticello, Mississippi, took down $32,000 for event number two. Kevin Balsman, who was a St. Louis player, mm-hmm. Was in the PLO event and took down almost $12,000 for that. Roy Riley was the guy who won that huge re-entry event with over 1,000 people in it. He won $57,139 for first place. He's from Savoy, Illinois. And Bill Burns, who's from St. Charles, Missouri, won $19,000 in event number five just yesterday. So congratulations to those guys. And as we're doing the show here this afternoon, the Six Max event is taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And we're working our way forward to the 1K event on Friday. And then on Saturday, the $1,620 main event, which will have two flights and many chances for you to get in here as well For our St. Louis listeners, there will be a mega satellite on Thursday evening. Then on Friday afternoon at 5 o'clock, there will be a $75 super satellite
yep.
with 20 seats guaranteed into the main. So that is a really good way to get into a $1,620 event for just $75. We'll have a big crowd. I got into last year's main through that super satellite. Mm-hmm. It's a great tournament. And then there'll be another mega on Friday night as well for, I think, $355.
Yeah.
So you'll have multiple chances to get in and play in the 1620 main for this weekend, and we anticipate a bigger field than last year. I think we were over 400 in last year's main. It'd be great to get to 500 or 600 this year.
Yeah, we were about 430, I think it was. I made day two. Greg Raymer made day two. Several of us did. I ended up losing set over set on the flop. A set of eights versus a set of fours. Unfortunately, I had the fours.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I've discovered that you have a history of this. Just in two stories already today, Nolan, he's told us in 4 minutes.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've been on the show 7 minutes. He's already told us two bad beat stories.
Oh, good. Okay, here we go. Let's see. Pick on Dennis Day. Here we go.
Nolan, I wanted to ask you about something. Now, I mentioned that our attendance is up, and a couple of players have said, oh, yeah, I'm here, and I'm chasing circuit points.
Good point.
What does that mean?
Well, this is the eighth season of the World Series of Poker Circuit. The idea came about in 2005 that a lot of people, for whatever reason, they can't fly to Las Vegas during the summer and play in the 5 or 6 week event out there. So the best thing that we could do is take the World Series like a circus, take it on the road and go around the country. And so we have 17 stops this season. Last year we decided to do something brand new, which was to create a national championship points system. What this essentially does is rewards the players who are out playing in the tournament trail and accumulating points and cashing and this and that. And we have a $1 million tournament at the very end of the year. It's the national championship. And so players this season who are on the cusp of qualifying are, as you say, chasing points here in St. Louis. We have an event coming in Philadelphia, and then the last one is in New Orleans, mm-hmm. The middle of May. Whoever gets the 100 spots, essentially, from points gets to play for the $1 million. It's a nationally televised event in the beginning of July. There's only 3 televised events at the World Series this year. One of them is this event. So it's a good way to get on television and perhaps win a lot of money.
Well, I love the way you guys have it set up, too, because the main event winners for all 17 of them instantly qualify. The gentleman who is player of the series at each of the 17 stops, who accumulates more points at that one, instantly qualifies. There's 34 of them. But then what you do is the next 66 points, the next 66 highest points also qualify.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a huge chance, and the guy that ends up making a couple of final tables but doesn't quite, you know, win it, he has the chance. And these guys are running around. The same guys you see in Rincon, you see them in Council Bluffs, you see them in St. Louis, and you'll probably see them in New Orleans. And getting those 100 points, because that's an awesome tournament you have out there, that $1 million free roll. Everybody wants to play in it.
Yeah, you actually explained it a little better than I did, Dennis, so thanks for coming over the top of me on that. And I would say that as a bit of a commercial advertisement here, that it's not too late.
Oh,
someone
no.
could come in and make a couple of deep runs, maybe win an event and another deep run. Mm-hmm. That might be enough to get you a seat. So
you're saying with
happen.
My two small caches, I've got a shot at it?
Oh, absolutely.
I would play every event here, go to Philadelphia and play every event, go to New Orleans.
You know what? I'm just going to short circuit all that. I'm going to win the main event here.
There you go.
Then I get a
you
ring.
You always
and then
take the short way. Be adventurous.
But Sam Barnhart, didn't Sam win the chance to go last year?
Sam essentially is the Chris Moneymaker of the circuit. The best story we've probably had in the entire 8 seasons. Very quickly, here's what happened. It's an extraordinary story. For those who have not listened, don't know it. Back last year in Tunica, Mississippi, this is back in February, he was literally walking out the door the night before the main event. Literally walking out the door. He said he had about 200, I guess he had 200 left in his pocket. And he said, I didn't have a very good series. I'm not going to play any more events. And one of our staff said, you know, Sam, we have one more mega satellite into this main event. Why don't you play? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I should play. And so, you know what happened. He won the seat into the main event. The next day, he plays in the main event, wins the main event, wins $200,000. He's the champion, now comes to Las Vegas, wins the national championship at Caesars Palace, and then plays in the main event of the World Series and finishes, I think, 16th.
Yep.
Yeah, 16th it was.
Yep.
For another $400,000. Mm-hmm. So because of his decision in a cold, rainy night in December in Tunica, Mississippi, February, where he was about to walk out the door, he does a 180, goes back, plays in that satellite. That changed his life.
Yep. Yeah,
it changed his life.
Now, here's the kicker to the story. We actually have been trying to get Sam on the show to tell that story since last summer. We had no way to get in touch with him. Every time I heard from somebody, Sam's over at the Rio last summer, I would go over to the Rio. Well, there's 8,000 people there. You can't find one particular person. Somebody would say, oh, he's over here, oh, he's over there. I could never find him. We didn't have Sam's phone number. I even called some people I know in Tunica. Oh, yeah, here's Sam's phone number. They gave me the number. Not connected anymore. Okay, fast forward to 3 days ago. I'm here. I'm talking to Nolan at his table where he's gathering information for the articles that he's writing for WSOP.com. And Sam walks over. And I say, Sam, we've been trying to get in touch with you. No one in Tunica knows where you are. He says, I'm in Vegas. That's why. His phone number had changed. And so now Sam has guaranteed me. He can't be on with us today because he's playing in the Six Max event, mm-hmm. but he guaranteed me that he will come on the show, and we'll talk about that and about his adventures since, which I think are also pretty intriguing. And he is here chasing points again, like many of these other players are, to try to get to that $1 million free roll.
It is. If you guys have never... If you've never been to the Rio, you really need to get out there. Obviously, that's the number one. But you can kind of get a prelude to it to go into one of these 17 circuit events. And it's growing by leaps and bounds. Next year, there could be 20 or 25. Who knows where it's going to go? But this thing is expanding. Poker. Well, the listing of the five guys you had there.
Yeah.
California. You know, I mean.
Mississippi. Missouri, Illinois.
It's poker is so phenomenally popular right now. It's still growing and growing. How many are we going to have in the main event this year? Quick question.
Oh, main event of the World Series in
yes.
Las Vegas. Well, a lot of people, you know, I constantly field questions like this, and we never do put an over-under on that because it would, it, you know.
Yeah, some we do.
Well,
we're not too smart, though.
You can, but if you say an official says it's going to be 6,500.
Yeah, that's true. There's
actually people that bet on this now offshore. I mean, there's actually, you know, a betting market for this now. And
there are people at this table who bet on it last year.
But here's the thing.
Who won that, by the way?
You did. Yeah. I snap called the under. Stupid, stupid bet.
Here's the thing, gentlemen. I don't understand this. I constantly get people that say, oh, the attendance is going to drop. The economy sucks. There's problems getting over here and this and that. All the excuses in the world, I hear them every single year. And the World Series has proven once and again and again and again, it is recession-proof. People from all over the world want to come to Las Vegas and play in one of the 61 gold bracelet events that we're going to have this year. It amazes me. I thought if we held our numbers, especially after Black Friday last year, if we held the same number, same level of participation, same traffic, that would be a victory.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we not only, you know, we surpassed it by another 15%, more countries, more people, and it's just amazing. And so, you know, back to your point about growth, certainly the World Series of Poker circuit is growing, but the real growth of poker is overseas, internationally. As you well know, Dennis,
absolutely.
Traveling all over the world.
Oh, you're 100% right. Everywhere you go, poker is, it's there. Name me a country you can't play poker in. You
know, Iran.
I mean, it's... I used to like you, Paul.
Actually, that's not true.
There's
ways to dial in and get around that with the ISP. You could actually.
All right, then I'm changing my answer. North Korea.
Depends upon what your last name is.
If you're talking online poker, the U.S.
All right, that's a sad story I don't really want to go down, but hopefully changing.
Well, let me talk about one thing about playing live poker here in St. Louis,
yes.
Because the fields are up. And I do want to address something for people who've come from out of town and have never played in this casino, Harrah's St. Louis, which has this beautiful 22-table room with windows, and it's closed off so you don't hear the slot machine noise or anything. All you hear in here is poker players whining about bad beats and chip noise. But one of the problems that we still have because of the rulings of the Missouri Gaming Commission, is the tournament has to be out on the casino floor. There's no ballroom for us to put it in. There's no giant arena like they have at Hammond or in other places. So you are out on the casino floor, and people say, well, why doesn't Harrah's do something about that? Believe me, if they could, they would.
Yep.
But the state limits where they're allowed to do that. And because of the old riverboat rules that go back to the 90s, they can't do that. So you are here. But they have increased the footprint of tables here. They're up to 90 tables this year. And able to handle everything, even when we had that huge re-entry event here on Saturday. They never closed down the cash games. The tournament kept on going. People kept on buying in. I saw a lot more aggressive play. You actually warned me about this, that in re-entry events,
yep,
people tend to play much more aggressively because they figure, you know what, if I lose this draw, I could just rebuy and come back at 5 o'clock. So I saw quite a bit of that. We also have people who are very happy that the Chinese restaurant here came up with the clever idea of walking around with samples of their food, and then a place that is normally not open until 6 o'clock at night was doing a limited daytime menu for people, for poker players only. You couldn't get this as a slot machine player or a table games player, but if you were in the tournaments, Fat Thai is the name of the Asian restaurant here. Mm-hmm. They're walking around with menus and selling, you know, sesame chicken or chicken fried rice or a couple of other items off their menu. We've never had that before, and that made the thing go much, much better. People weren't trying to run around on a 15-minute break desperate to try to get a pretzel for a meal when you can actually get some Chinese food in here. So that's another new thing that we have at Harrah's St. Louis this year during the circuit.
Yeah, I love the way they're trying trying to cater to the players' need and make it so it's a comfortable, enjoyable experience in any and all ways they can. And I'll say a short little thing because I don't want to get on my soapbox or anything like that, but I am lucky enough to be able to play all around the country and a lot of other countries, and I see a lot of different setups in that. One of the most restrictive states in the country is Missouri. And some of the regulations and everything they have, for some reason, are not needed in other states.
Mm-hmm.
I dare you to give me the logic of this as to why you can do items and different things in New Jersey and Nevada and Florida and California that you can't do in Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make any sense to me.
No, it doesn't.
If these guys would actually leave the state and watch other casinos and other operations.
You know what? They don't even need to leave the state. They need to come in the poker room.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. Come in here and actually see what's going on,
yeah,
rather than try to imagine the worst-case scenarios.
Yep.
They actually were worried for a while that waitresses shouldn't stay in the same area during a whole shift because they might collude with somebody sitting at a table. What? Never mind. I don't even want to go there. Let's move to something much happier.
All right. Well, let me actually come on top of what Dennis said. I think he's made some interesting points. And before the show, we were talking about baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go around to all the major league parks, you certainly see idiosyncrasies, shall we say, about every park. Every dimension is park. All the winds are different. All
yep.
the weather's different. The shadows are different. The field's different. It's the same game, but all the elements and all the atmosphere is different in every major league park.
Yep.
And really, the World Series of Poker is much the same way. If you think of a poker table, the felt's the same. The chairs are the same pretty much. But all of the atmosphere and all of the, I say, the creature comforts for the players are different in each stop. I've been to just about all of the circuit stops, and every stop has some advantages and disadvantages. You go to Atlantic City, for example, the rooms are practically free.
Mm-hmm.
They're giving away, because the market's depressed there, they're giving away rooms for free to poker players. Now, you come here, you come, say, to a place like New Orleans, they're going to charge you more money.
Yeah.
But then on the other side, you get tableside service here, the food you're talking about, the Chinese
mm-hmm.
food.
Right.
So there's a lot of pros and cons at every stop. And in a way, that kind of makes everything unique, and it keeps it fresh.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show. I'm Paul Harrah. Dennis Phillips is here with me. So is Nolan Dalla, who's the media director for the World Series of Poker. This is the World Series of Poker circuit event stop in St. Louis. By the way, the cash games are going crazy here as well. Plenty of them by the evenings. Most of the tables are filled, and any game you want to play, you're going to be able to get into. There's lots of pot limit Omaha here. In fact, on Saturday, I'm 100% sure that there was more pot limit Omaha in this poker room than in any other casino in America. Not only pot limit Omaha, but a big PLO game, a small PLO game, multiples of each one, different tables of each mm-hmm. one, plus pot limit high-low. You don't find that in many places in America, and we really are one of the headquarters of that, which is why we talked last week about PLO basics. And if you didn't download last week's show or listen to it, get it, listen to it, and then come on in and give it a try here, because this is the new growing game, and we want that to we want that word to spread as much as we can. Not that we're turning away any no-limit players. The place is packed with them, but pot limit is really, really on the rise here.
Well, Paul is trying to say in a very polite way is if you come in here, he'll give you lessons.
I think there will be many volunteers in the room who will be happy to do that. Actually, you know, one of the nice things about a circuit event is we see lots of players from out of town coming in.
That's true.
And some of them are very good. David Key is here. He won the PLO event in Atlantic City, had his ring with him, very good player, wanted to play as big as he could get. That's great. We got some young pros who have come through who want to play, but we've also had some new people who say, you know what, it's a 1-2 game. I'm going to sit down with $100 and see if I can figure out how to play this game and learn some of the strategies, play a little slow, watch what's going on, learn it. Mm-hmm. That's how you get a poker education in any game. If you were a stud player and you'd never played Hold'em before, that the way you learned it was by going and playing Hold'em. So the same thing holds true for Pot Limit Omaha as well. One other new thing that's going on here, which I had not seen, that they apparently introduced recently on the circuit, is when you sit down in the tournament, it used to be that you had to wait until the big blind came around to you.
Yes.
Now, for the first time, you can actually post wherever you sit down. Let's say you sit down behind the button. You buy in late. Tournament starts at noon. You get here at 12:15. You sit down at the table you're assigned to in the seat that you're assigned to, and the button has just gone by you. Normally, by tournament rules, you would have to wait until the big blind came around, and then you could start playing. Mm-hmm. But now, apparently just a few stops ago, they made it so that you can post in, put the big blind up wherever you sat down, and now you would play. Here's my question to you as our poker strategist on the show.
Oh, boy, here we go.
Why would you ever post into a tournament? I mean, in a cash game, it's obvious you want to get in and you want to start playing, and there's no reason to sit around and wait. But in a tournament where chips are so much more valuable, why would you put 25, 50, whatever it is, maybe 100, out there that you don't have to, and you can just wait a few hands?
Most people will just wait till it comes around to them. Occasionally, there's a time when you have somebody at the table, you think it's a strategy. I've actually, one of the tournaments I bought in early. Because there were two gentlemen that were very short stacked at the table. Thought there was a good chance they were going to be shoving in there, and I had position behind both of them.
Mm-hmm.
So why not take the chance that hand's going to be there? I think the value of it was there. But that is an exception. Normally, I will sit out until it's time for my big blind.
Okay. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with more of the Final Table Poker Radio Show from Harrah's St. Louis. By the way, the Bad Beat jackpot is up to $78,000 here. And you know what? Before we take the break, let's talk about the next big thing that's going to be here after the circuit, and that is the chance for you to get into this summer's $1 million event. As we've told you for months now, there's going to be a $1 million buy-in event at the Rio right before the main event at the World Series of Poker this summer. This is something that Guy LaLiberté and the people at the WSOP have put together as a benefit for Guy's charity, which is called One Drop, which is a water charity helping people around the world who don't have access to water to get that access to water. And so the tournament is called the Big One for One Drop. And Nolan, I understand that there are more than the 22 that we've heard who are registered for this already?
Yes, just last week we've announced that we've reached the magical number of 30. That means there's 30 $1 million as a prize pool for the One Drop tournament. That would mean that the first prize, the winner of this event, a gold bracelet event, by the way, will win more than Jamie Gold won in 2006. He would become the richest prize ever in the history of poker.
Yeah, Jamie won 12.3. This, I think, is 12.6 now with those 30 players in there, which makes it the richest.
Yep.
They're paying the top 20%. So with 30 people there, the top six are going to get to cash out on it. It maxes out at 45.
48. 48 players is what I was told.
Okay, I was told 45.
Okay, whatever it is.
But whatever on that. I mean, Nolan's probably going to be on it real quick here, I'm sure. But
well, I don't want to dissuade some millionaire who's thinking about getting, well, if it's only going to be 45, I'm not playing.
Yeah. if that's the case and they do fill it out, and I think there's a very good chance they'll be very close to filling out if they don't, they will get more than the 30 they have right now. You're talking about a first prize of $17.4 million for winning that tournament. And all you have to do is beat 44 other players. It's not like it's hard.
No, not at all.
You beat more than that a couple of times already.
I beat 1,000.
See, there you go.
Yeah. In fact, a few years ago, I played in the first ever 1K event at the Rio when they started the stimulus special. and it had 6,000 and change.
Mm-hmm.
And I could walk out of there and say, I beat 3,000 people and didn't make it to day two. How many other times can you do that? But anyway, the reason I mentioned Harrah's St. Louis in connection to the $1 million is because this is going to be one of the casinos that's going to offer you a chance to get to that $1 million tournament for $100. Here's how it's going to work. Every Friday and Saturday, the first three weekends of May, they're going to do single table shootouts here. For $100, you buy in. If you win your table, you get your $100 back. So now, you can't free roll much more than that. You got your money back. In addition, you then win a seat into step two, which is a $565 event that'll take place here at 2 o'clock on May 20th. One seat from that tournament will be guaranteed to go on to step three. Step three is a $25,000 buy-in satellite, which will happen at the Rio on June 30th. I don't know how many people that's going to draw, but at least one of them is going to be from St. Louis, and it could be you. If you then win that event, there will be one seat from that guaranteed to go into the $1 million tournament. And now you're free rolling. Remember, you got your $100 back. So when we said you could buy in for $100 and get into the $1 million event, you could buy in for $100 and not have to pay another penny, because they're going to pay your airfare and they're going to pay your hotel to get out there to play in the 25K event. And then you win that and you're in the $1 million buy-in tournament.
This reminds me a little bit of like the NBC Heads Up. Because there was selected 64 players, and there were qualifiers from a couple of the online sites. So you'd have two or three or four people that you'd never heard of before, that had never played in something this big.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sitting down at a table across from a Chris Moneymaker or a Doyle Bronson or whoever like that.
Yep.
Can you imagine somebody from St. Louis qualifying, going out there, making it through that 25K satellite,
yep,
and sitting down at a table and looking around going, I've seen him
on
TV.
Let me tell you the names of some of the people. Eric Seidel, Patrick Antonius, Gus Hansen, Johnny Chan, Daniel Negreanu, Justin Smith, Jonathan Duhamel, Tom Dwan. They've all committed to play in this. Plus, businessmen like Guy LaLiberté, Phil Ruffin, who I think owns Treasure Island.
Yes.
Out in Las Vegas. Other businessmen like Andy Beal, the billionaire Texas banker who we've talked about often on this show, who took on a corporation full of poker players in Las Vegas in some very famous games several years ago. Other businessmen like Sean O'Donnell, Richard Young, Paul Foy. I'm guessing that Richard Young and Paul Foy are part of that Macau group of millionaires who like to play really high. Carrie Katz, Bob Bright, and many others. As Nolan said, there are up to 30 players thus far, and there'll be one of them added to that from St. Louis, and it could be you. $100 shootouts on the first three weekends of May, every Friday and Saturday. For details, you can go to harrahsstlewis.com and find out about them, and also find out about the WSOP main event satellite that's going to go on here on April 28th and 29th. Dennis got into the main event through that in 2008. I'm in the main event this year because I won my way through that double shootout process. You can do it as well the last weekend of April. So there's lots of stuff coming up here. You can go to Facebook and like Harrah's St. Louis World Series of Poker Room there, or you can go to harrahsstlewis.com and find out more. We'll be right back with more of the Final Table Poker Radio Show on 590 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com, and our podcast available through Stitcher Radio and iTunes. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show, live from the World Series of Poker Room at Harrah's St. Louis, right in the middle of the World Series of Poker circuit event that has been going on here since last Thursday and will continue through this weekend with the big main event and lots of tournaments between now and then. Lots of tournament players from all over the country and lots of cash game players in town for this as well. This is always the biggest poker event of the year, and we're happy to be in the middle of it. I am Paul Harrah, sitting alongside my partner, Dennis Phillips, and also joining us, Nolan Dalla, who is the media director for the World Series of Poker. By the way, if you want to find out what's going on in the poker room here at Harrah's, you can download the Bravo Poker Live app which tells you not only what games are going on, but what the waiting list is for those games as well. Bravo Poker Live, available for Android and for iTunes. Nolan, before we move on to any other stuff, and particularly any other happy-related stuff, we did get some sad news yesterday about a man I know that you know very well, Amarillo Slim, member of the World Series of Poker Hall of Fame. What do we know? He's doing well, right?
Amarillo Slim is 84 years old, and certainly he's at the end of the biggest game that he's ever played and that we all play. And the last news that I heard that I don't want to say imminent, but he's in hospice care and wasn't expected to make it through last night. And the very first thing that I did when I woke up this morning was to see if, check my voicemails and so forth. And I guess it's one of the times that, when I didn't receive a voicemail or anything in my inbox, I realized that he's still alive. But let's just say we know that Slim's time will come at some point here. Slim's going to be regarded, is going to go down as the most famous poker player of the 20th century. And I'd like to say that again. He will be remembered as the most famous poker player of the 20th century, and probably a player who put this game on the map, so to speak. Whether you liked him, loved him, loathed him, and there's a lot of people out there who fit all those categories, he was one of a kind and certainly a character.
Wow,
he's going to be remembered that way. And I don't think, again, he's not a warm and fuzzy character. And I do not, even on his deathbed, I don't use the word death, but let's be frank here. Mm-hmm. Even on his deathbed, should be afforded a great measure of respect, I think, for what he's done to the game. Certainly a self-promoter, certainly a person who was part carnival barker and
part con man.
Con man and snake oil salesman and all of those things. But boy, did we love him and did we eat him up? Yes, we did for the last 40 years.
Yep. All those appearances on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, I think, were great. I mean, here he was, as you say, a character and, yes, a con man. But he was also kind of, bringing poker into people's rooms, living rooms and bedrooms, through his exposure on that show. And he appeared on that show many, many, many times. And for a while, you talk about him being the most famous poker player in America. He was probably the only poker player most people knew.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I don't think anybody, even people like Doyle Brunson and named Johnny Moss and people from that same era and the same group that he played amongst, those were not household names. Certainly people now with televised poker know those names much more than they did. But you're quite right. In the 1970s, particularly, he appeared in California Suite. The great Robert Altman film in 1974 was a star in that film. And then, as you say, a dozen appearances on The Tonight Show and then the Good Morning America and this and that. And I'll tell you what, he never, as many times as I talked to him, and he never had a script, ever. He just talked and if you listen back to some of the, I think you said you have some of the archives of him talking, it's almost as though this stuff is written by a master writer.
Yep.
It really is. You can't make this stuff up.
Yep.
And he's just right off the top of his head with this incredible stories, some of which is true, some of which not, but boy, is it entertaining.
It's absolutely entertaining. We were lucky enough to have him on the show and do some different stories and everything. We had him up at the suite at the Rio for a 10-minute interview.
Yes.
And an hour and a half later, we're still listening to him. And that's no exaggeration.
And I do have that recording. And once Slim has passed, we will definitely go back and I will put together a special podcast version of the show. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll broadcast it. I don't know. But we'll certainly make a podcast of it. Because when we originally aired it, we had to chop it up into so many different pieces because we had so much time with him that we didn't expect to.
Yeah, yeah.
We, I think about 6 weeks in a row, ran Amarillo Slim Story of the Week.
Yeah.
Where he told about one adventure or another that he'd had.
Yeah.
He was actually here at this circuit event last year.
Yes.
Played in several of the events, came and sat down on the PLO table, sat down next to me, remembered our conversation. We talked a lot more. People at the table were asking him questions. One guy said, "Slim, what is the town of Amarillo like?" And Slim said, "Amarillo has zero population growth." The guy says, "What do you mean?" He says, "Every time a woman gets pregnant, a man leaves town."
I walked in here last year, didn't know he was going to be there, and he looks up and says, "Hi, Dennis." And I said, "Hi," and I walked right on. I stopped and I said, "Wait a minute, what are you doing here?" And we had a nice five-minute conversation and such. He remembered it. I don't care if he was 83 years old. The guy was still sharp. And he had some great stories and totally entertaining. And if you go back and watch some of the Johnny Carson reruns and the different stuff, you will still be entertained today.
Absolutely.
The stories are timeless. Yeah.
Now there is an ugly part of the story about Amarillo Slim, which involved some allegations about one of his granddaughters. We're not going to go into them again here. Nolan wrote the definitive piece about that after talking to Slim about it. You were the first person that he opened up to about that. And then when he talked with us at the Rio a couple of years ago, he was very open about it as well because of your conversation with him. How tough was it to do that?
Well, obviously I have my own personal views about it. No one can be sympathetic to someone that may have committed the worst crime you can commit, which is an act against a child. And so I did not want to be a part of any, rehabilitation project on his behalf. And I just wasn't going to be part of that. But I thought that poker, and particularly our legacy, the game, needed closure on this subject. And I don't put myself in the same category as a 60 Minutes correspondent, but I kind of looked at it as a 60 Minutes moment. One of those moments where you sit down in front of the camera, and what we did is I talked to Slim for 3 or 4 hours in a hotel room at the Bellagio. I said, Slim, I'm going to ask you all these questions that you're going to be uncomfortable asking. You will answer them, and I will put them exactly as you tell the answer. It's going to go into the record. Do you understand that? He said, yes. And then he answered we went through the process of the interview and this and that, this happened. I left it up to the reader or the viewer afterward, and that's the way it should be, as to whether they believe him or not. My own opinion is irrelevant here. Mm-hmm. I am providing information to the public, hopefully, that will put closure to this matter. And you're quite right that his legacy is tainted by this. I'd like to tell a very quick story if I may.
Absolutely.
Probably the most memorable thing that I dealt with on Slim was, this is back, I don't know, Dennis, if you were there that year. Were you 2007, the World Series?
No, 2008 was the first one.
Okay, 2007, what we do at the World Series, the room is full of 3,000 or 4,000 people, and we would recognize, there's Greg Raymer, and we would go up to Greg Raymer, and while we're having the tournament, we'd say, ladies and gentlemen, we have the 2005 world champion here, Greg Raymer. Greg Raymer stands up, the whole room applauds. An hour later, we go to Bobby Baldwin. The next, we go to Doyle Brunson. And we do this, we try to recognize the champions. Mm-hmm. Well, Amarillo Slim is a 1972 world champion. And this is going on for several hours, and we had not done Slim yet. And I thought, these allegations about child molestation had come out earlier that year, and we said, I don't know what kind of reaction he's going to get. Are they going to boo him? Who knows what's going to happen here? So I had the microphone, and I went up to Slim, and I said, Slim, I don't know if you want to do this, but we want to honor you and what you've done. Will you do this? And he did it. And I'm going to tell you something. I had chills on the back of my neck as we were announcing Slim because I wasn't sure what reaction he would get.
Mm-hmm.
Ladies and gentlemen, the 1972 World Poker Champion, Amarillo Slim Preston. Amarillo Slim takes his hat off, rises in his seat, and you hear applause, and then pretty much the entire room becomes engulfed in applause.
Mm-hmm.
I want to tell you something. I looked into Slim's eyes at that moment, looked into his eyes. Slim is not a sentimental man. He's a hardened man who's been beaten down by life and has seen and done it all. And there was a glimmer of a tear in his eye, I swear to you. And I know that moment meant more to him. It meant more to him to rehabilitate his image and his legacy in this game than maybe anything that could have been done.
Mm-hmm.
It all happened spontaneously. I think it shows the poker community as a warm, giving, this is a very brutal business to a certain extent, but certainly I think people want to believe the good things about that man and about everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and the legacy survives.
The thing of it is, forgetting that particular aspect of it, Slim was still good for poker. He really was, because of all of the publicity he brought out, all the entertainment he provided people, the shows there on Johnny Carson and the rest of it. He did bring poker forward. He became very recognizable, and I think he helped the industry. Therefore, for that reason, he should get some applause there, in my opinion.
And let people make up their own mind, which is exactly what Nolan said.
So I think you worded that very, very well. So thank you.
Speaking of doing good with poker, you wanted to mention one other thing about the One Drop charity that we were talking about earlier with the $1 million tournament this summer with the Gila Liberté Water Charity.
It is, because this is for clean drinking water provided to people around the world that don't have access to it. Each and every entry into this is going to give $111,000 to that charity. So you take that times the 30 or times the 45 or whatever number we end up with, that's a huge amount of money that's being raised for this charity. And all I think that does is just speak. The number one way that charities are raising money in the U.S. right now is through poker tournaments. The number one way that people are raising money. You know, I want to state that again.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
So people are giving back. They're enjoying it. It's a great social media type place to get together. You can have so much fun, and you raise it for a good cause.
Mm-hmm.
Poker is so widespread and so beneficial, and so many of the pros give so much back. I love hearing stories about an Andy Block that's in California playing for a tournament one night for a charity at his own expense, hops on a plane, goes all the way to the East Coast to play in another one the next night. You know, they bought him into that tournament. Whoopee-doo. He just spent how many hundreds of dollars to fly overnight, gives up his sleep and everything, to play in two tournaments within 24 hours for two different charities.
Mm-hmm.
Guys do that all the time and don't get recognized for it. So I love the aspect of this $1 million one. It's a huge buy-in. It's a specialty thing. It's going to be an ESPN, but it's going to do a good. It's going to raise millions of dollars for the One Drop charity.
Yep. It's going to be great. Thursday night, we're doing the St. Louis premiere of a new poker documentary. We've given away a lot of tickets to this movie, and we're looking forward to seeing everyone who wants to join us at I think it'll be one of the most interesting nights we've had, because Dennis and I are both going to host the St. Louis premiere of All In, the poker movie. Doug Tirola, the director, was scheduled to be with us today. We're actually going to have him on next week's show after we've seen the movie, so we can talk to him about it. You can join us at 7:30 on Thursday night at Ronnie's Cine, a Werenberg Theater in South County here in St. Louis. If you can't make it there, they're also showing it the same night at the same time at three other Werenberg Theaters in De Pere, in St. Charles, and in O'Fallon, Illinois. This is, as far as I know, the only night it's going to be shown in movie theaters before it goes out next week onto iTunes and video on demand, etc. So if you'd like to join us, Ronnie's Cine in South County, St. Louis, Thursday night, 7:30. I would say get there early, because I have a feeling we're going to probably have a full house there.
I'm quite sure of that.
And Dennis and I will do a little Q&A afterwards. And somebody emailed and said, do you mind if we do autographs and pictures? And I said, well, bring your autograph. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. not a problem with that. Just one thing. In the question and answer series, please don't start describing hands to me and ask me what we do.
I had aces and this guy had kings and he catches a king. Did I do something wrong? Yeah, you told me that story. That's what you did wrong.
But it should be a fun night. I'm looking forward to the movie. I've watched the trailer for it. It involves quite a bit with Chris Moneymaker.
Yep.
It also involves, if you look in the trailer, Howard Lederer and Chris Ferguson.
Yep.
And some other people there and some of the statements they made.
This is the movie that has the clip in it that we played when we first heard about it.
Yeah.
With Howard Lederer being interviewed and saying poker players don't cheat.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see that in the context of the actual movie.
Yeah.
But Matt Damon's in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And some non-poker players, you know, Doris Kearns Goodwin and Kenny Rogers, who wrote The Gambler, and many other people. So Thursday night, Ronnie's or one of the other three Werenberg Theaters, if you want to see the movie.
Yeah. Paul, can I add one more thing about that?
Excuse me for interrupting. Nolan Dalla featured prominently in the movie, I understand, as the poker historian he really is.
Well, I haven't seen it myself, so I'll be on the edge of my seat as well.
Are you going to come with us on Thursday
night?
I'd love to.
I'd to see all of your radio audience there cheering for the movie. And I want to say one thing on behalf of Doug Trail, the director. All of us here have dealt with media, and this is not meant to be disparaging, but a lot of media just don't get it. They don't really understand poker. They don't understand this culture. They don't understand the mindset of poker players. And it's very difficult to make the connect. And when I first heard of this movie being, this documentary being made, frankly, a little bit I rolled my eyes. I thought, here's another one of those. They're going to do a hatchet job or this and that. They're not really going to get the culture. Doug spent 3 years editing, shooting, editing, re-editing, and then the Black Friday heavy, he's got to re-edit again. He really put a lot into this project.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, as everybody out there that works for a living and is dedicated to their craft, this man dedicated 3 years of his life to this project. I think that kind of dedication deserves our respect and certainly our inquisition.
Yep.
And we're going to go and watch this movie. But in the back of my mind as I watch this, I want to pay tribute to Doug. He's going to be on next week, you say. He put a lot into this, and he really gets it. I think he really understands poker, and that's very refreshing for a change.
I agree. And you talk about the media not getting it. I'll never forget, Dennis, I think it was a year ago when you were asked to do some TV to help promote the circuit event. You went on some local news show here, maybe a morning news show, and they asked you the basic questions that always get asked.
Question six, answer.
And then they handed you a deck of cards and said, can you show us something? Like you're a magician. Like, is that your card? They wanted you to deal out a hand there, and let's see who has the best hand, as if that's poker. I mean, talk about not getting it.
Oh, yeah, and you run into that all the time. A lot of times you have guys that really know what's going on, the guys that are from Card Players or Bluff or Poker News or something, and they're into it, and they ask you intelligent questions and that. But sometimes you get these that are just so off the wall, you don't even have a clue how to answer them. And you look at them like, really? But I love... You remember on the Inside Deal, I was in Connecticut filming that one.
For ESPN.
And they had, Bernie was at the table, Bernard Lee, and his co-host was there. And she asked me one of the questions that I hated all the time, after you won that money, what was the first thing you bought? And I looked her in the face and I said, a cow. And she had no clue how to handle it or answer it. Blank look on her face, and and they didn't edit that. They showed that, and I thought that was so great. So my apologies to Lori, I think it was. A great gal, nice gal and everything like that.
Yeah.
But, I just had to respond some way different. I just get so tired of some of those questions that, really, who cares?
Yep.
But
There have to be times for both of you, not so much for me because it's not my profession, but since you both are in the poker business now, there have to be times where you don't want people to find out that you're in the poker business. I mean, civilians, I'm not talking about media, just average everyday people. You don't want them to find out about it because you know that it's going to be questions like, is it true that bluffing is 90% of the game and that sort of thing? Do you run into that?
Oh, I run into it all the time. It's a real, real quick funny story. I'm riding taxis all over the place and this and that, and it's pretty cool. And I used to answer honestly, what do you do for the, I work for the World Series of Poker. Do you know Phil Ivey? And you hear all this. And by the way, a lot of it's really cool questions. I love talking about it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There was one night in particular, I was in Atlantic. I was going from Philadelphia to Atlantic City. It's an hour drive. It's a long drive. And I was taking the taxi. And I said, I don't want to talk poker for the next hour. I'm very tired. And I just... So the taxi driver says, so what do you do for a living? And I said, well, I work, I'm in computers. Oh, really? What company are you with? And I didn't know what to say. And I said, IBM. I'm just totally winging it.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, no kidding. I worked for IBM for 20 years.
Whoops.
What was your position? Security guard.
I was talking to a floor guy here the other day. I was at a table, and our table was about to break in the tournament, which means that they're going to move us to other tables in the tournament, disperse the players at our table to others, because as people go out of the tournament, there are open seats, and they want to fill it up and keep it condensed. So he comes over to our table, and I know he's about to give the speech, which is, don't put any of the chips in your pocket. We're moving you to another table. Here are the rules. Make sure you go directly to your new table, all that sort of stuff. So I stand up, and I'm waiting because there's a hand playing out on the table. And I said to him, I'm just curious, how many times a day do you think you give this speech? He said, I don't know, but it must be about 30 times a day. And then he paused, and he said, about 2 weeks ago, I was out on a date, and we went back to her place. And the next morning... she woke me up and told me I was talking in my sleep. And I don't tell people what I do because I'm going to get a lot of poker questions, which I don't really want to have to answer, having been around it all day long. But I said, really, what was I saying? And she said, You kept saying, I don't know, maybe the sun was in your eyes or something, because you kept saying, blinds up, blinds up. And he said, and he said, yeah, and I told her I was an interior decorator. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show from Harrah's, St. Louis on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. Our podcasts are available via iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. I'm Paul Harrah's with Dennis Phillips and Nolan Dalla, who is the media director for the World Series of Poker. Let's talk about one non-World Series story, at least today.
All righty.
Because there's a piece of video that came out last week from the big game, which
yep.
Party Poker ran over in Europe. Where, and we talked with Kara Scott about this last year. She's one of the people who covers it.
Mm-hmm.
It is streamed live online and I believe on TV as well in Europe. It's a 48-hour cash game. And the people who sit down in the cash game can play for as long as they want, although at some point people can get voted off the table. I don't remember the full details of this.
It's kind of complicated, some of the stuff they do.
But it's a cash game where people play marathon sessions.
Mm-hmm.
One of the people at the table was Phil Locke, who holds the record for the marathon session
yep.
at the Bellagio a couple of summers ago. And we had him on the show and talked to him about that. Well, there was a hand in which you'd have to say that Phil must have been sleep deprived. Now, I'm going to explain the hand, and then you can comment on it. He raises with ace-six offsuit. And Tony G, who we just had on the show a couple
right.
of weeks ago, calls off some of his money with the 7-3 of diamonds.
The monster hand for Tony G.
Yes. Tony gets two cards, money goes in the pot. Doesn't matter what the two cards are.
I think he occasionally looks at them. I'm not for sure.
And Andy Mosley, another player at the
yep.
table, he 3-bets it because he's got the ace-king of hearts. He makes it 3,400, comes back around to Phil. Phil 4-bets with his ace-six to 10,900. Now, this is not unusual in high-stakes games.
No.
People are putting moves on each other and trying to get reads and all the rest. Tony throws his 7-3 away at this point, realizing that he should never have put any chips in there, making a comment like that. And then Andy Mosley shoves the rest of his stack, which is 31,000 euros.
Yeah.
And Phil thinks and then calls.
And again, this is... I mean, a lot of people would lay that down, obviously, but he really did have close to pot odds. That was not that bad of a call,
right.
depending on what hand he had.
Right.
You know, if you can do the different math, you can figure it out different ways. The first reaction I had when I talked to somebody about this was, why would he call that off? Well, because, you know, you really are close to pot odds.
Well, let's explain why. Because with ace-six, if his ace is an overcard,
mm-hmm.
even if Andy Mosley has pocket kings there, with the ace as an overcard, he's still 30% to
there
hit the
go.
Ace.
Mm-hmm.
So he's... just a little bit less than a 2-to-1 underdog. You do the math on the amount of money that went in the pot, he's got $11,000 in the pot already. It's going to cost him $20,000 to call. It's a pot of about $45,000. That's a little bit more than 2-to-1, so the math is right. He
mm-hmm.
knows he's behind.
Yep. That's not an argument.
But again,
as long as he doesn't have a better ace... it's a call there.
Right.
And it's the right call.
Yep.
The hands you don't want are the ace-king, the ace-queen, whatever like that.
But anything
any kind
down
of
to ace-seven.
Yeah. The hand you're hoping he did this with is pocket fives.
Yes.
That doesn't happen very often, of course.
Correct.
But, you know, there's a chance of that.
Okay. So all the money goes in.
Absolutely.
And Andy Mosley exposes his hand. And somebody mm-hmm. says, Phil, turn your cards over. And Phil says, no. Well,
again.
In a tournament, you must turn your cards over when
right.
it's an all-in situation. But in a cash game... you do not.
Absolutely not.
So Phil does not turn his cards over, and he maintains the Phil Locke stare.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, there's comments on the other end of the table now about what he possibly has and
yes.
what he would call this with, and, you know, a big variety of hands are being thrown around.
Well, the flop comes out, the deuce of clubs, the ten of spades, the deuce of diamonds. Check. Well, there's no checking involved because the money's already in. There's a pause. The dealer puts out the six of diamonds, and now the side chatter really increases.
Yep.
And Tony G gets into an argument with Alec Torelli and Scott Seaver
yep.
Over who they think has the best hand.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony says, if you'll give me even money, I'll take Phil's hand here. Now,
yeah.
They've not seen Phil's hand, but they know that the other guy has ace king, and the board is deuce 10, deuce 6 at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So they make a side bet.
Both of them do.
Both of them make a 3,000 euro side bet.
They take with Tony up on this.
Tony wants to make it 30,000, by the way. But
yeah.
they agree to do it for 3,000. They agree. The jack of hearts comes on the river. And there's a pause. And Phil mucks his hand. Phil had a six in his hand.
Yep.
There's a six on the board. He has a pair of sixes. Andy Mosley has ace king. And that's it. The pot is 63,000 euros, and Phil mucks his hand.
Mm-hmm.
How's that for sleep deprived? Now, here is my question.
Okay.
Who wins the side bet? Because after Phil mucks his hand, Alec Torelli and Scott are thrilled because they know, well, if he can't beat Ace King, we win the side bet and Tony has to pay us off. So Tony gives them each 3,000 euros.
In actual,
but the thing has been streamed online and televised, and there's videotape of it. And
there's no argument that the best hand was Phil Locke. There's also no argument that Phil lost the hand. So it depends technically, was the bet for who had the better hand, or was the bet for who won the hand?
Oh, that's a very good question.
And I'm not for sure which way it is. In my opinion, and I think Tony G might even agree with this, he ought to just give them their initial money back and call it a no bet, because it's kind of a 50-50. You could have interpreted it either way, but that it remains, Phil had the best hand, but Phil lost the hand.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know which way you go there.
Mm-hmm.
And I also guarantee that Phil is probably still sleep deprived, because he still hasn't gone to sleep after this, going, what did I do? What did I do? What did I do?
I have seen Phil when he's just woken up, and he always seems sleep-deprived to me.
All right, now, I'll tell a story about me, because this happened. I'll make it very quick. You have to look back at those cards. You have to go ahead when you're mucking your hand, and I've seen a lot of people do it. They'll turn the hand over and throw over their face up.
Mm-hmm.
That way, everybody sees it. That way, if you've misread your hand, if you missed a straight or one of those really weird things, it's shown, and you still win the hand. There's almost no reason to muck your hand face down other than pride and not wanting to show it. So if he just turns his card over, even if he thinks he's beat, when he turns him over, he would have won the hand.
I would disagree with you. I would look at my hand, and if I knew 100% that I had the loser, I'm not showing it, because I don't want to give away information.
Well, I will tell you this. I made a great bet the other day.
Yeah.
Absolutely phenomenal, because I had the king, queen of diamonds in my hand, and I ended up with a flush, and I put a bet out there in the river, and the other guy folded, and I looked at my queen of hearts down there and went, oh, good fold, and threw my cards away.
I had a four flush. Very nice. All right, Nolan, it's 40 days until the World Series of Poker starts up at the Rio. 61 bracelet events this year and two circuit events between now and then, plus the $1 million free roll. We know you've got a very, very busy summer ahead. We appreciate you spending some time with us here in St. Louis today. And we've still got a ways to go with the main event coming up this weekend here. There's a $1,000 event on Friday.
Yep.
There are a couple of other events along the way, including the horse event at 5 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, a PLO event at 5 o'clock this afternoon, Mega Satellites on Thursday and Friday, and the $75 Super Satellite into the main event. And I should also mention, on Sunday at 2 o'clock, there's a ladies event here.
Absolutely.
Plus another ring event at 5 o'clock on Sunday. So still a long way to go. We're glad you could be here for part of it with us.
Thank you. It was a terrific show. Thanks a lot, Paul.
Thank you very much. Nolan Dowla, Media Director for the World Series of Poker. Next week,
Poker Historian.
Poker Historian as well. Next week, we'll ask Doug Tirola about Nolan Dowla and his role as media historian.
See if he can have a good story about
in All in the Poker Movie, the documentary. We'll get to that on next week's show. Tuesdays at 3, join us live on 590 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. Or you can get our podcasts of all 167 of our shows on Dennis's website, theshipleader.com.